Hey everybody, it's time. The Connie Fox theme song sweepstakes is coming to a conclusion on Friday. If you go to our Instagram handle, at the ATN podcast, you'll see each of the five finalists and be able to listen to the songs. And then go to our bio and click the link, which takes you to the voting process. Your vote matters. Get out and vote. Rock the vote. Vote or die!
The Around the NFL podcast.
I don't hate them. I just feel better when they're not around.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by Intuit QuickBooks, the official sponsor of the NFL. Whoa. My name is Dan Hanses, coming to you from a studio filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Greg Rosenthal, and yes, the first time ever, a live Money Read by Matt Money Smith. What's up, boys?
Oh, thanks for having me. What an honor to be in the same room with all these heroes. I hope you gave me the challenge last night. Dan, you said, will you come up with a live created by yourself, not the great Around the NFL listeners, money read or money tag. And I did that for you, as a matter of fact, Wes. I know you love Bukowski. It's a little Bukowski quote. So there you go.
You think thoughtful. This might actually propel you to be paid for this work at this point, because you've probably logged 2,000 to 3,000 of these.
Right.
And not a cent has gone in your direction for this.
Well, you know, I guess just looking back on precedent, I'm going to guess no. And then pay for the money tags, probably won't be paid for the in-person appearance.
I mean, yeah, and you're coming in on a day off.
Yes, really. To some degree. Yeah, well, normally I would be doing digital work today.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, so it's budgeted. It's budgeted. It would have been a nice little...
But you're a big deal, because I can't remember us ever actually, like, moving. You know, you have your big afternoon radio show, right. Petrus and Money, in LA. So we actually moved our time and we're in a totally different studio, the one we do our TV show in, just for you.
Just for me.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
Just for me. And because you guys all like the music, you did it for a good cause. The man that actually kind of got me into the business of entertainment, Kevin Weatherly, the longtime programmer of K-Rock, is retiring. So I have to go to his retirement lunch today. A man who found the Goo Goo Dolls. Wow. Name was his responsibility. They just dug it out from the Metal Blade record catalog and started playing it amongst many hits. So wow. That is why I'm here early today.
We just did the Dizzy Up the Girl album on the Throwback Podcast.
Wow. Hey, congrats. You know what? Hold on.
Deep dive.
Let me bookmark that real quick and make sure I get a listen.
Goo Goo Dolls had a run where they were kind of the go-to, like, pregame or halftime show or like the kickoff special Googles.
Not and offensive, then, but rock
right.
enough.
But then very Train safe. Train came for their corner and
exactly
it was kind
right.
of like, sorry.
Oh, Pat
and
was
it
like,
got
I'm
nasty.
Taking that.
It got real ugly.
Some of our earliest interactions with Matt Money before we really did any work together was Dan and I sending out top five lists of like Counting Crows songs, and you right away decided you hated our musical taste.
I still have it.
Money still has on his phone because I checked in a couple months ago because Money...
It would take me a while now that I've got 90,000.
Well, I have it off the
children.
Top of my head. The top five still live songs, the band Alive.
I believe that. But what was the best was the intro line. It was like, for those keeping track, top five live songs
presumptive.
All time.
Yeah,
it's like, but I don't think anybody's keeping track.
But we
it's like those tweets where it's like for those who have asked,
right.
here's my top five.
That's
like
exactly
no one had asked.
No one.
It was asked. I have to say that. Just let the history state that it got out that I was a Live fan. I don't know, it leaked that I was a fan
really?
Of Live.
And there was
and
a then rhetorical question. Dan, what are your favorite Live songs? Funny,
well,
you should ask,
since
Dan.
You ask. And the number one song, I believe I might have had Selling the Drama there, which I don't know if it would hold up. You know, Iris is a sneaky gem.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
now you're back to the Goo Goo Dolls.
I
have kicked this thing off track immediately. My great apologies, everybody. I just remember the two words, Lakini's juice.
Burn it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, all right, we got to put an end
to
this.
Banger. It's a banger. And Money has, as the, you were basically the boss who decided when on K-Rock, which is the most influential FM rock radio station in the world. And you might have contributed to the end of Live's career because you had that type of sway.
Well, just quickly, two things. One, the man whose lunch I am attending today was the key master. So I would bring him things,
right.
and he would either say, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down, and that's how they would get on. But two, Live, when we first played, I'll tell you a funny Live story. We first played, help me out, Lightning Crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, radio is for those of you that like the innocence of music, the you know, the idea of a singer-songwriter. we didn't play it in its entirety. We're like, we're not playing a freaking 5.5 minute song, you know? So we cut out a portion of it. And there was like this sect of live fans that were so offended and angry. And I was like, who are these people? Like, it's not like it's this masterpiece that we're playing. So we don't want a 6 minute song. We want a 3.5 minute song.
Plus, like on the radio, you kind of lose like the raw sexuality that you get from Ed Kowalczyk in a video. You know, if you see him on MTV.
Well done.
As long as you didn't cut out the part where it's like, the angel opens her eyes, pale blue colored iris.
That stayed. That stayed. But then there was also the moment when I turned on live officially, and I guess I really never turned on them. I just liked them even less, was when Ed said that his band was bigger than you two.
Well, we have a
room. On my
he said
corner.
That. We he did
room,
say that.
A studio filled with sub, 20 somethings, and they have no idea what we've been talking about.
Okay, rock music was a genre.
Yeah.
All right, money's here.
I'm going to apologize for that last 10 minutes.
No, I loved it. And Iris was, yes, the Goo Goo Dolls hit, but also was a live song off Throwing Copper. Just
there we
so
go.
We're all on the same page.
Is this the first ever throwback podcast outside of your garage?
Exactly right.
Going to get money in the garage eventually.
Eventually.
All right, here we go. You are a man.
I am a man.
That knows so much about different sports and different leagues. And we are, when it comes to this time of season, the Around the NFL podcast, we're a little vulnerable because it's a blind spot, college football. Now, you cover it very closely, and you were just in Indianapolis and helped anchor the coverage there for NFL Network. So we wanted to have you on the show and just get your vibe. And
let's
if you could sit in on the news with us, we'd love that too.
Sure.
We'd love to just get as much money as we can. So
Hold on, how about this? Yeah. I always find it interesting, like what people that don't watch a lot of college football take away from the combine, because you go in, if you watch college, with these preconceived notions, and if, you know, and you have your recency or confirmation biases, and when your guy, you know, that you like does great at the combine, you're like, see, I told you, when they do bad, you just, it's like it works perfectly. You say, whatever, I don't care about the combine.
Yeah,
Look at the pro day. I mean, come on,
tape.
Yeah, you got pro day coming. It's all good. So it's always interesting for me to hear people start talking about people like Mekhi Becton or Murray, or, I mean, LaVisca Chenault, like these people that, you know, you watch all season long and you're like, oh, wow, this is like now making its way, because obviously it's a much bigger production. It's a different lens. And you kind of have already formed your opinions about a lot of these guys over watching them, because remember, they got to play 3 years. So you see a lot of football from each of these prospects before they get to the combine. So what did you, like, was there anything that jumped out at any of you?
Did someone change your mind that, like, you had a feeling of before the combine, having watched them, and you were kind of surprised what happened?
Yeah, so, like, the interesting thing about Oklahoma is, you know, for those that pay attention, sorry for being, I don't want to, you know, kind of, whatever, college football splain it to you. That's not what I'm trying to do. But
we need that.
We skate by through the college football.
Like, we don't pretend that.
It's fair.
All spreads aren't equal, right, in college football. They're different. The Oklahoma spread and what Lincoln Riley's been able to do is figure out a way to get guys so open, you can't, like, it's crazy that people haven't been able to crack the riddle. You know, Oklahoma players are so open on so many plays against Big 12. Look, Big 12 is not a place for defense, but I think they've also gotten their bad reputation because of what Oklahoma has done to the Big 12 and the points and the yards. So I kind of went in wondering, okay, what do we make of CeeDee Lamb? Like, is he really that good? Are we really putting him in the same category as Jerry Jeudy, who you talk to people and when you watch him against SEC defenses, is this just magical route runner and this complete receiver? And then you see CeeDee Lamb out there and you're like, holy crap. Like, yeah, all of his production, yes, he had Baker, Kyler, Jalen back-to-back-to-back as his quarterbacks, but he is as responsible for their success as they are for his. And he is a special player, watching him out there and talking to him and hearing from people in the interview rooms. I think that was probably one of the bigger takeaways I had, that he looks to maybe be a little bit ahead of Jeudy and really in that category, that rare wide receiver that you could draft in the top seven,
right,
and no one would blink.
Because going into it, there was some talk maybe there isn't like a Calvin Johnson or Julio Jones in this class, but I feel like as the time goes on, maybe they're pushing closer to that.
I think he's I think the comparison, you know, measurable production style is apt, and it's DeAndre Hopkins. That's what he is. And I talked to someone who works for a team that very well could draft him and are inside, I'll just say, the top 15, and they said, I was in the interview room when Hopkins came in.
Chargers, by the way. One
that, this is a humble brag right here. This is why we bring money out.
The voice of the Chargers. He said, about the Chargers.
He said the thing about Hopkins, and what did Hopkins slip to? Like 20, he was late 20s, right?
I think he was in the 20s.
So he said, I remember walking out of that room saying, there's something about that guy. It just feels like you don't see it from wide receivers, but then he'd just claw your eyes out to get an extra couple yards. And he said, for that position doesn't necessarily generate that type of behavior or disposition. And they're like, CD's the first player I felt that had that.
Oh darn!
To I love him. That.
So you mix that with the talent, and yeah, that was definitely one of the big winners to come out of there.
Hopkins went 27th overall in 2013. So everyone keeps saying this is the best wide receiver class, and sometime I guess from a depth perspective, did you see that? And have you seen that during the?
I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it for a while now. It is a really good group of wide receivers, which makes it interesting, right? If you're like, just look at the Raiders. So you've got 12 and 19, and everybody has circled that as a Jerry Jeudy or a CeeDee Lamb spot. But look at everything else they need.
Do you have a favorite guy in maybe a second or third tier of the wide receivers?
Gosh, I love Michael Pittman out of USC. That's someone who's real physical, and you see how well, you know, you just kind of look at Juju and kind of what was said about him at the combine, athletically, from a number standpoint, and then you see what he's able to become in the NFL.
This is Michael Pittman's son?
Yeah, this is Michael Pittman.
I don't know. Junior.
Is he Michael Pittman Jr.
And Michael Pittman, one of the most underrated fantasy football assets of the early aughts. You're getting 70 catches and 900 rushing yards. Forget about it.
Huge pipes. So,
like yes, a great exactly. Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think probably the most swole
Thomas
receiver,
Jones.
Right? Oh. The most swole receiver ever, right? No, well, David Boston.
David
probably
Boston.
Well, Pittman was a running back.
Pittman was a running back who caught.
Well, Boston wasn't fair because I don't think it was natural. Yeah.
Boston was like Bane yes. by the end of his career.
Yes, I've scattered this all over the place.
I feel like there are so many teams that need receivers because it's kind of like, it's just where the league is going that you now need four or five.
Right.
And so many of the good teams need receivers too. Like if you think the Eagles, the Patriots, sure the Raiders too, but like there aren't that many teams that you look around that feels like don't need receivers.
Well, like look at last year, right? I mean, just all, you know, your draft, all these guys, McLaurin, these guys are all second rounders, you know, Samuel, and I think that'll be similar.
AJ Brown.
Yeah, AJ Brown, that'll be similar this year. I mean, DK Metcalf, where, you know, I mean, Jefferson from LSU, Higgins from Clemson. I mean, I don't want to just kind of get into the name salad thing and just start rattling off a bunch of guys. But yeah, I think it's it. So what I'm getting at with
and
the Raiders
Nikhil
is
Harry
like,
went in front of all of them.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. So, and that's what's tough, right?
Sorry, is
you
just, we'll see.
You never
it's
quite know.
It's not looking good.
How they're going to make that jump. But the thing is, you know, can you play press man? Can you, you know, and that's what you don't see a lot of in college. So I think that's something they got all sorted out. But, you know, going back to the Raiders real quick, so they need all this defensive help. There's like two really good corners, and then there's a huge drop. You know, there's Okuda and there's Henderson, and then after that. So it's like if you're at 12 and you have this sort of freak in CeeDee Lamb, but you need this corner and you have maybe C.J. Henderson there, like what do you do? What's the right thing to do there?
I also haven't ruled out them for like trading up for a quarterback with those picks if they don't get a veteran.
I've heard that's a very real possibility that they like Jordan Love quite a bit. I don't know if he'd be there. I think he might be there at 12.
I feel like every quarterback at this point, and it's a bit of a trope, but they're just going to flush up the board and be gone much higher. I mean, looking at the quarterbacks, is there one out there that's starting to get a lot of buzz? But in your mind, which one could use a red shirt year in the NFL and not be thrown into the fire, oof, you know, come September?
I mean, I think Burrow would be fine. You know, just that's the guy that I'd be the least worried about. Two, I think it'd be fine if he was healthy, but I'm guessing he's probably going to get a red shirt, you know, with that hip and you know, like it's interesting, right? So the whole Jordan Love thing is kind of weird to me because we saw that Josh Allen was pretty darn successful right away, and it feels like Jordan Love's way ahead of that. And when you kind of start going through, look at Carson Wentz, and oh well, you know, Jordan Love plays for Utah State. You know, who cares? It's like, well, Carson Wentz played for North Dakota State, you know? And, right. and like, it's not like the Pac-12 is throwing out these super monstrous defenses, nor are the Big 12 that Jared Goff and Kyler Murray are having to deal with when you talk about taking a step to the NFL. So that's something I've never really understood, is taking a shot at a guy for the level of competition in college. I know you want to see them put up just boffo numbers year after year to feel better, but I do think there is something to be said about just being comfortable with the way someone plays the position. And so I think that's where, you know, maybe the numbers of Justin Herbert versus the eye test of Jordan Love is really going to come into play. And I think that's, like, to me, Herbert's a weird one. And I watched a lot of Pac-12 football. I don't know. I guess at the, like, you just ever feel a spark about something? Like, that's kind of what you want, I think, from a quarterback. And, right. and even in his best games, you just don't feel it.
That's
just
part of the package, isn't it?
Yeah, Dan felt the first time he heard Live. It just was like...
Playing Live by the Riverside.
That's good. Great single. That's going to be the interesting one, is if, you know, where Herbert goes. Because I've heard that teams like him more than Tua. Like that, you know, which is crazy to me. Like that I can't understand. You know, and the thing about Tua, I think, is... I feel like I'm talking way too much on this pod.
No,
just
do
to
it.
Jump in. I feel like if Tua checks out medically, right, in the recheck, then he's going. He's going at 2 or 3, like right. someone, you know, if he doesn't, then
see
okay,
it every
exactly.
Year.
So like then what happens? Then I don't know what the landing spot is for him. So it just feels like I think he's going to get, you know, good marks on the recheck from what it sounded like coming out of Indy from the trauma doctors. It's crazy that you have to say that, right? You know, it's not a medical physician. It's a trauma doctor that has to give you the diagnosis, and they gave you the thumbs up.
Trauma.
Right? Like that's it was a trauma injury.
So triage
it wasn't a football, right? So that's the weird thing about Tua.
Football is trauma.
Turns out.
I don't know. Like, throw us out there. It would be traumatic. Be
like, fine. if you were the Bengals, who would you want to be your quarterback moving forward?
Well, that leads. Burrow is the guy everybody's connecting to Cincinnati, and Joe Burrow, Chase Young, who a lot of people think goes number two potentially to the Redskins, but we'll see when we talk about these quarterbacks. But Burrow and Young are both, they're getting some hype as generational type talents. Do you see that for both of those guys?
I mean, for Burrow, I thought our colleague, and I know you don't like to hear his name, but Daniel Jeremiah put it best.
This time of year, it's okay.
And that is, you know, that sometimes
it
takes a minute.
He's like a February to May kind of talent.
Is that right?
Prospect.
He's seasonal.
Yeah.
He's seasonal
sense
for you.
All the DJ is faking it on any level.
Have you,
any,
like, what
any,
does he you know, do the rest of the year? Are you aware of, like, during
Well, that's one of the reasons why I am so well-versed in all of this, because I get to cheat off his test. He and I sit next to each other on the charters, and he just watches film. So
and he just talks and talks
I
and
watch,
talks.
One of my
you
great,
do the Chargers broadcasts with him, to
yes,
be clear.
Yes, yes. Yeah, DJ is the color analyst. I am the play-by-play man for the Chargers. So we're on these charters, and sometimes, you know, because you're a West Coast team, you're on the plane a lot. You know, our flights are long. So we're watching 6 hours of Alabama film or just offensive linemen.
Whoa.
And it's fun. Like,
I want to party with you.
Exactly, right? That's good. Now, I will say,
but
DJ's drinking ginger ale. I am not. I'll just leave it as that. At that. So, and sometimes I have been tempted to switch the glasses just to see what would happen if just a drip would hit his
Gee
lip.
Willikers!
But if you pull back like that football, and that's all great. It's interesting. Like, is there anything else there?
To DJ?
You know, you're just going to pull it back and it's just like...
It's a question that had to be asked.
Yeah.
A good, honest, God-fearing man that loves his family.
Overrated.
Family, man.
Yeah, that's DJ. That's DJ, you know. We invite him out a lot. And because the football season, he's still... I mean, that's what's crazy about
his
him.
Oldest kid is older than Wes.
that's what's weird about... That's what's tough about the job. Like, if you do it right, And I think, you know, I'm just going to say all kidding aside, it's so stupid. But if you do it right, because I do believe there are people in high profile positions that don't do it right and they just start spouting off and you'll catch them and realize they never watched that guy.
Yeah.
DJ does it right and he commits ridiculous hours to it. Like, look, I'll watch two games of Jedrick Wills. But then I'm up. I'm up and I'm walking around and I'm seeing if there's a card game because I'm out of booze and I might need to get a beer from someone. It's like, hey, man, I can't. I'm not doing this anymore. But he's dedicated. Okay,
you know how to get this down to the 3.5 minute version of the single for this show, right?
I like that Money just told us he's a much more well-rounded person than DJ.
Ooh,
I like
wow, that's interesting. You know, I want to hear more stories of what goes on in the charter.
Like, I like to live. I like to experience.
Philip Rivers taking people's money in card games?
No, and we are separated. So okay. The charter is is coaches. Coaches and staff, medical is upstairs. We fly
trauma
747. players are in the middle, and then media and just kind of slappies. We're in the back.
Okay.
So,
You refer to yourself as a slappy. I think you know that you're not a slappy. You have like 12 jobs. You have multiple streams of income.
I'm just, I guess.
Heading towards the bank account. You're not a slappy.
In the frame of reference that is Charger ranks, you know, I probably fit into
back
the slappy ranks.
Back to the generational thing, though.
Yes.
Do you see either of those guys, Joe Burrow or Chase Young, as next level, all pros, that type of vibe?
So like, this is what's funny coming out, right? Is most combines when you leave, if you have, you know, conversations with scouts, they'll usually give you a name or two. Like last year, I remember coming out there like, I don't know, man, there's Nick Bosa and I really don't know anything else. Like, I know Nick Bosa is going to be good is what we heard from almost all of them. And you don't get another name. And like, that's pretty par for the course. They might give you one or two names. They might say, I think this is the quarterback that has the, out of this combine, I've never seen scouts with Permagrin like they have. They're like, you got three tackles that I feel really good about in Becton, Wills, and Wirfs. You got two receivers in Judy and Lamb that I think are going to be franchise-level wide receivers. You've got Joe Burrow, Tua. Everybody seems to agree that those two are special, special quarterbacks. And then you've got a corner and a CUDA. Like, I've never heard guys talk about, you know, I didn't even say Chase Young or Brown. Like, I've never heard so many names of, like, they never say sure thing, but that you feel like I'm getting a really, really good player. If I'm picking in the top 12 or 13,
like,
that's
if Akuda was
said.
in the Eric Fisher draft, he might be going one.
Right.
But this is more like that, 2011 draft, maybe 2014, you know, where it's pretty good one to
this
one
is a
to
great
12.
Offseason, by the way.
The Fisher draft is the worst draft ever. Like, that's what's crazy about that draft. When you go through it, it's like
they
you're
didn't
like,
miss.
Okay, what,
actually, Eric Fisher wasn't the worst pick
like,
there.
What,
he really
what?
Wasn't. He was like an okay starting tackle. And if there was a lot of other ways to miss a lot bigger there.
Was the Eric, that was when it was like Luke,
that was the
Luke
draft,
Jokel
right?
was going to be
that
the
was
first
Hopkins.
Pick.
Yeah.
And then it's like, uh-oh, huge news from the draft stage. It's not going to be Luke Jokel. It will be Eric Fisher.
Right. Great. Jake Matthews. And like it was, but that's what's crazy. Like think
hold
about,
on to your butts.
Think about doing a redraft and putting a wide receiver at number one. Like that's how bad that draft was. Wow.
This
thinking about Bill Parcells coming out of retirement to draft Jake Long over Matt Ryan. People forget about that.
Yeah, there's that.
But this is a really deep, fun draft class. An insane free agency year with all the quarterbacks and everything. So it's good. It's a good time for to be an NFL
too
fan.
Too many quarterbacks. There's just simply too many of them.
See, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know. Is there going to be a Philip Rivers or a Derek Carr or a Marcus Mariota, Jameis that's just left holding it?
Like, especially if someone
Mariota
like
get a job.
Right?
If someone like the Bucks actually like went in on Teddy Bridgewater, which there's a little bit of talk that could be possible, then it does feel like there's just not enough spots.
Right.
That someone like Jameis or Derek Carr or someone that you just wouldn't think could get left out in the cold will.
Well, now that Philip Rivers is no longer connected to the Chargers, he's not going to be on the charter plane. You're not going to be calling his games, maybe one or so, but we'll see. Is he shot? Can he play anymore?
No, I think he can still play. Absolutely. I think you put him behind a good offensive line, and he is still as masterful at diagnosing defense and recognizing a weak spot.
So you think he would do well, say, the Colts?
That's just the perfect marriage. You put him on that team with that O-line, with a solid running game, a scheme that he's familiar with, a coach that he's familiar with, and I would expect him to thrive. I would certainly say it's an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett. That's for certain.
I have a question just for my own edification here. There is a trend in the NFL over the last,
nice
say, half decade
right
where edge rushers have really exploded and proliferated around the league, and offensive linemen are almost extinct coming out of college. And this year we're seeing sort of a reverse of that trend where the offensive tackle class seems talented, freakishly athletic and deep, and the edge rusher class seems really thin compared to previous years. Do you see this, if you can look at college football and say, is there a chance this becomes a thing where it happens more than one year, or is this the outlier?
It's, I'm going to do this too. It's a great question, because it's a question that I ask repeatedly to college coaches. I ask, why is defensive line so far ahead of offensive line? What is going on? The guys come in at the same age. They come in knowing what their position's going to be. So why do we get so much more, you know, so much more pressure on quarterbacks in the NFL than we do protection? And there's really never been a good answer. The one thing I'll tell you about offensive line in college is it's the only coach, position coach, that the head coach can't F with. If you have a good offensive line coach, they are on an island. Don't you dare say a bad word to them, because we can't afford to lose them. So that kind of gives you an idea of how hard it is to find a really good offensive line coach in college and the kind of impact it can have. I don't know if it just takes longer. You know, one of my theories, and this came up when Jason Smith was drafted out of Baylor. And I said this in the moment. I said, how does it make any sense to draft an O-lineman out of Baylor when the quarterback doesn't have the ball, but for maybe three quarters of a second?
And he was a safe pick.
One of the worst NFL picks of the
ever.
Last decade.
And I said that, and I think that's kind of what happened a little bit in college, is you got so many of these spread offenses where linemen, they're not run blocking. They don't have to pass block for more than, but, you know, it's like Dan Marino's back there. You know, the snap's there and then the ball is out. So you don't really know. You don't really have to. I said, I'd be drafting my guys from Navy and from Georgia Tech and guys that ran the option. Give me some nasty offensive linemen that actually have to engage and be physically overpowering. But I think we're starting to get some of that back, right? As there was that huge zig. And now, you know, like Stanford came with their power running game and Notre Dame got going with a bit of a power running game. And oh, what do you know? Mike McGlinchey and, you know, and all these, Quentin Nelson, all these old linemen are coming out of Notre Dame.
And the 49ers and the Ravens.
And they're pretty darn good, you know? So I think we're starting to see a bit of a zag back in college where there are more pro sets and there is more attention paid to a running game. And I think that's why you saw so many offensive linemen drafted out of Iowa, Wisconsin, because they've never strayed from that. They've always kind of done,
right. That's
what Iowa and Wisconsin football do.
I've been doing some homework on the edge rushing class, digging into some tape of
okay,
my own.
Yeah.
This
what do you
young
like?
Man out of Penn State, Yetur Gross-Matos. Why would someone name a child that?
Yeah.
First round prospect.
I was told his name rhymes with detour. So I guess Yetur. And then someone was like, no, it doesn't. I was like, whatever. Gross-Matos. I can't answer that. I don't know why he would be named. But I would assume, based on the three names together, maybe international player sort.
You know, I wanted to see you ask that question.
Yeah, what's wrong with that, being an international player?
Not saying anything's wrong, just asking why that would be the group of words you'd come up with.
Yes, it's, I wonder if moving forward, if he's going to be known as YGM, you know, as a play-by-play guy.
Very quickly.
I may call him YGM moving forward.
The lefty.
Before we get to some news, what is Tua's last name?
So this is pretty easy. It's the... People don't know there's N's where there are no N's. So it's Tungvailoa. It's not
hard. It's pretty simple.
Tungvailoa. Like, I haven't heard you say it, Greg, on our show.
I have. We've done this same bit.
Greg's
you
the
made
one who
me
said
say it.
It starts with tongue.
Tungvailoa.
So I'll give you, here we go. Here's. I'm going to give you guys a little peek into the future. So the name you're going to have to learn how to pronounce, because he's the best high school football player I've ever seen in my life, and he played here in Southern California. He was the quarterback for St. John Bosco.
Scoopage.
That just won the national championship. Well, it's a
Bosco wins every time.
Modern day wins every time. Don't you dare disparage the Monarchs.
All right. Modern day was like the 90s.
I told you it's
not
deep.
No, they've been really good the last couple of years. Right. So Modern Day and Bosco have traded titles, but it's inexplicable that both of these quarterbacks are leaving the state of California. It's the state of affairs of UCLA and USC football. So DJ Uiagalelei. Is the name. DJ Uiagalelei.
It's got to be DJ Ui.
A lot of people call him Ui, but it's Uiagalelei. He will replace Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. He'll be a freshman this year, and he will replace Lawrence the following year, and he is ridiculous.
DJ Uiagalelei.
That money sweet. He's Mr. Southern California. He's bringing us high school names.
I'm just, all the folks that are listening that like college football, they'll know the name, certainly, when Trevor Lawrence has taken
the ball. I like listening to you and Petros. Before I even met you, I would drive around LA listening to that show, and you guys would dig into high school football to a degree where I had no idea what you were talking about, but it was entertaining. It was
thank you.
Full of
love high school football because it's, you know, it's the cradle of it here in Southern California. Bryce Young, by the way, was the modern day quarterback this year. Is he going to USC or UCLA? No, he'll be going to Alabama.
It's funny you say you love high school football, but when I was on those cold, wet benches in Rockland and Westchester County over in New York in the early aughts, I never saw money.
No, you didn't. No, this is right. As a matter of fact, you didn't because I was here in Southern California.
When the Nanuet Black Knights, Golden Knights were up against the Pearl River Pirates.
See?
Zeuser was there.
That's right, Zeuser.
Talking to Bruce Miller.
Is that what they called you, the Zeuser?
Keywords on the bench.
Only I call myself Rockland County, the cradle of football.
Short yardage back. Get the Zeuser. It's third and one.
Pull back. All right, let's do some news.
When push comes to shove over the next 10 days, 15 days, whether the Patriots will be able to exert upon him and convince him that, look, this is the best place for you. It always has been. It always will be. We want you here.
You know, we had Tom Curran of NBC Boston on our show just Monday. I thought we had a nice interview with him. He shared some good nugs. He gave us some clarity on the Tom Brady situation. But I didn't see a Roto-World blurb come out of our show, which is disappointing. Let's just be honest.
The aggregators didn't pick up on your interview.
We didn't get any.
Well, wouldn't you say that that's on us? That we?
Yes.
I thought when I saw this news that he made yesterday was, gosh, I wish we asked about that.
Exactly. NBC Sports, NBC Sports Boston's Tom Curran told our old friend Chris Mad Dog Russo on his radio show that the chatter connecting Tom Brady to the 49ers is, quote, real. Now, again.
I heard that in Indy, by the way. Before Dion went on the air and said it, I had heard that, and I dismissed it. I said, that's ridiculous. And then I would assume Dion heard it as well, and because he's a master at disseminating information, played it as, you know, I got an idea. Just this is crazy, but, you know, hear me out here. You know, but that was as early as, like, Thursday, Friday, that was kicking around.
I mean, if you're Jimmy Garoppolo,
the details of it are pretty fascinating. That Curran said it was from both sides. That of course Tom Brady wants to play for the 49ers.
Right.
He's looking around the league at possible teams to play for. That I can't come up with a better pick. Not just because
it's his childhood favorite team.
Right. I mean that's the starting point. But the next would be how good they are and how
great
much they
line,
can protect them.
Everything's great. Coach.
But the fact that the 49ers have some mutual interest, according to this report, is why.
And put yourself in Garoppolo's shoes. You have a really, you get traded from Tom Brady's team across the country. You have this great ending to the season with the Niners. Then you blow out your knee.
You played much better than Tom Brady in 2019.
You blow out your knee, very frustrating. You come back, you improve as a player. Maybe you're not all the way there where you're a superstar. Maybe you'll never be that guy. But you have a better season than Tom Brady. Your team goes to the Super Bowl and has a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. And now you're hearing that the guy that you had to go 3,000 miles across the country to get out from under might come back to you. That's a tough situation.
It stinks, but I would say that you look back that when the Jimmy G trade happened, there were whispers that the 49ers had inquired about Tom Brady.
Not even whispers.
That was out there.
And secondly,
if you're Tom Brady and you're going to leave Josh McDaniels in this embedded Patriots environment for Team X, and you have no idea what really is happening, the one team I could trust if I'm Tom Brady, is going and teaming with Kyle Shanahan and seeing how that two-year process would play out.
It's the first one where I've thought, this is the first Brady rumor where it makes sense on his side. I don't know how it makes sense for the 49ers, but it does make sense for Tom Brady.
Well, there is a thought that Jimmy G and Kyle Shanahan, you know, aren't a perfect match, where he's not, you know, doing what Kyle wants, reading, the, you know, there's answers on every play, and that maybe Jimmy G doesn't always have the answers.
Just watch the fourth
and
quarter,
that,
the Super Bowl.
And look, if you're trying to like compare the ability to win before the snap or the mental ability of a quarterback, comparing someone to Tom Brady, you're not going to end up looking great. But I think that's someone where Kyle Shanahan would look. That's the advantage that Tom Brady would give to them. That he would know all the answers. And as crazy as it is, I mean, I'm not putting this as like it's the answer, but PFF, for instance, had Tom Brady as a much higher rated quarterback last year. And I don't think that's that crazy. I think Tom Brady played at a similar or better level than Jimmy G.
Let's put Brady's entire 2019 season under the same microscope that Jimmy G's fourth quarter has been under, and you're going to see a guy who failed over and over again with the New England Patriots.
It feels tremendously short-sighted if the Niners went this route. I mean, Brady's going to be, what, 43 in August? He's showing signs of slippage. Garoppolo is a guy that's still in his 20s. What is Kyle Shanahan?
That doesn't make sense. Right.
What do you do in 2023?
See, I think it makes perfect sense. I think if you're...
You have to think long-term, though.
No, you don't. Because if you're Kyle Shanahan, you're up 28-3 in the Super Bowl, you lose, and now what are the Falcons? They've never been back. They're not the same. Your window, that's the thing that's, you know, and I experienced it, you know, from 2 years ago with the Chargers at 12-4, beating the Ravens, going to New England, it's tied at 7. You feel like, okay, this is great. Then Brady gets the best of you. You come back the following year, and people are picking you to win the Super Bowl, to win the division. You've already beat Patrick Mahomes once. Maybe you figured it out with Derwin James, and it falls apart. You can't, like, there is no long-term
window,
in the NFL.
I get it.
I agree with that.
So fast.
But the,
so just go get it. Go win the one championship and worry about it.
Couldn't it be a one-year scenario, too?
That's it.
It's just a one-year scenario.
It also would just indicate that they don't, that Jimmy Garoppolo is someone that they're ambivalent about long-term. Because I think there are a number of quarterbacks, or there are situations where, of course, they would not want to jump off a guy in his 20s. But if they considered a move like
this,
it's because they don't feel great about Jimmy G. But I'll tell you who is excited about this news. Me. I mean, if there's a perfect situation
to get
for Patriots
back
fans, this is it. I mean, this is the result. This is what I, as a selfish fan, would have wanted. I've said, you know, on this podcast a lot, I don't want to see Tom Brady play poorly in any uniform, but I'd rather him play poorly in another uniform than the Patriots. And this is sort of the big story here. But I would think we talk about Patriots fans all the time. It's all you ever bring up. I wish I could jump off of it, but this would bring me back in. I mean, Jimmy G back.
I think it comes down to this. Does Kyle Shanahan think that Jimmy Garoppolo holds them back right now? And if he does, then it makes sense to look into it, I guess, if you're interested.
It is coach speak, but they absolutely believe it. Is guy A better than guy B? Do I think my team has a better chance to win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady or Jimmy Garoppolo next year? Because if I believe it's Tom Brady, guess who's coming to play quarterback for me? It's Tom Brady.
This is too good to happen.
I mean, that's some pink pony stuff right there. Jimmy G winds up back with the Patriots as their starter. Greg, you can't just sell that down the river as an organic happening. That feels to me like a pre-packaged, pre-planned plot hatched years ago.
But by the way, they don't have to trade Jimmy G to the
Patriots.
Right.
The Patriots. There would be no,
I'm sure there's a market for Jimmy Garoppolo.
There is no reporting on that whatsoever. I'm just connected to
that. There are plenty of quarterback-needy teams that would probably trade for him, that he has played well enough.
All right, moving on. But that is juicy, and yes, you know, it was just talking about in a Monday show. There was a list of 13 or 14 established NFL quarterbacks that are in some state of limbo right now in the league. I didn't have Jimmy G on the list. We got to put Jimmy. He's got to be on the list now.
Yeah.
Put him on.
That's 14.
If those dominoes fall that way.
And you know what? The list I brought up on Monday's show, I didn't put Josh Rosen on. We should put him on there. He's a first-round pick.
Established quarterback? I mean, I don't know about established.
Akili Smith was a first-round pick, too, and we're not putting him on.
All right. I'll keep him off. It's 14.
Jim Drunken Miller.
Speaking of moving on, I need to move on.
Oh, you got to go do your
thing. I need to go move on to NFL networking. Now.
I bet you could come back and we'll be wrapping
up. You finish the news with money. Right. I'm coming back for the
show. Who's your NFL Now husband
it's
today?
It's all right.
Who are you doing NFL Now with today?
I'm not sure. Either Andrew Siciliano or Patrick Claibon.
I thought we had an exclusive NFL Now relationship. I didn't know it was an open connection. NFL open relationship. I don't like that.
Oh, you're the only one we have that little sizzle reel of our laugh riot.
I like that they use that sizzle reel every single time.
I try to tell them to go away, and it's all old stuff. You know, it's
like, at least, I just do what the producers
tell
me.
I've said that same thing.
Are you 10:50? You have a hit?
Yes.
You better motor on over there.
Better hurry.
Motor your little butt over there. Look at those buns.
Get HR on the phone. If you had said buns, it would have been fine. But when you said little buns, now we got a problem. We got a problem.
All right. The Jaguars have agreed to trade cornerback A.J. Bouye to the Denver Broncos. How about this? Jacksonville will receive a 2020 fourth round selection in return. It's a cap space clearing move, Tom Pelissero reported. And Bouye arrived as a big free agent signing in 2017, paired him with Jalen Ramsey, Mark, and it was like,
Jacksonville is set at cornerback for years. Well, guess what? They're basically hitting the reset button. We talk about how there's some big cornerbacks, a couple big cornerbacks on the board in April. Well, Jacksonville makes sense as a team that might have to go after a cornerback because they've cleared out the cupboard.
Yeah, but where Denver is looking to, you know, progress after what will be the loss of Chris Harris, you look at the people that have departed. We mentioned this on our last episode. The people that have departed Jacksonville's defense over the last couple years, and they were one of the worst defenses down the stretch last season. It's hard to look at that roster right now and say bounce back campaign. Not at all. And it's when you see Jalen Ramsey tweeting too that he was happy for Bouye to get out of there. That I do just
free
think
all my dogs. D A W G S.
Something with the Doug Marrone experience, and there could be other people attached to that, is rubbing people the wrong way in Jacksonville. When you're seeing players celebrating other players escaping that environment, that's notable.
Well, it feels like Tom Coughlin tore the whole thing down, and he was scapegoated, I guess. But can we talk about the Leonard Fournette gift, the Will Smith standing in an empty room? When it's already been tweeted out by other athletes in the exact same scenario, it doesn't have to be like lauded as some hilarious gif. Like, it's already been done, but this is like Twitter in 2020. We've already had every debate, every argument. Right. Everything's already been funny three times. It's not funny the fourth time.
I think this speaks to what I was just talking about. Think about where the Jaguars were 2 years ago, right? You know, or was it 3 years ago?
Whatever it was. Yeah, right. When they played the Patriots in the AFC.
You've got one quarter to go, and you're in the Super Bowl. And Blake Bortles is your future, and you've got this nasty defensive line and this hammerhead of a running back, and now it's over. It's completely gone.
Burned to the ground.
Yeah, to pick up on your theme there, you know what Jacksonville said to the Falcons, hold my beer. I mean, that's you know, it's whatever.
I feel like hold my beer dropped off in 2018, and that was great that it went away.
Exactly. Yes,
nice
it was.
It needed to be eradicated.
Yes,
we
it
need
was.
By the way, Mark, it's been a while since you've eradicated terms from Twitter. Maybe a fresh list in the next couple
months?
Got a couple on the docket.
You know what? I will say this in defense of the overused meme. I still love that dude sitting at the table sipping coffee with fire all around him. I still love it.
That connects.
I really do. The successful meme is you have to watch it over and over.
Yes. You find yourself doing that for three straight minutes.
Still smiling. This is fine.
By the way, Bouye carried...
Is it Bouye or Bouye?
Bouye. Carried a cap number of 15... Nice cover for me there.
Yeah, you know.
$15.4 million
I'll
in 2020.
I'll let you do it four times before I correct you.
That's a lot. Jacksonville was not flush with cap space. Now gets a little bit of wiggle.
And I would assume it means the Broncos aren't going to sign, you know, that whatever Chris Harris's people were telling him. We ain't paying you that.
No,
he's got plenty of interest on the market.
You know what I'm bringing back, though?
What's that?
Speaking of overused things. Booyah!
Good luck.
Please.
All right. You know what? I'm going to let you have that one, Dan.
Well,
it's all yours.
I don't doubt you anymore after you successively brought back the Dean scream against all odds.
Oh, you did?
I did. I brought it back. It's huge right now.
After New Hampshire, did you?
It was huge, what, in 04? When did that happen? When did the Dean scream? I brought it back in about 2016. And people, it was a lot of buzz. And then I got off it. But it could make another comeback. It's like we were talking
about LeBron
and Jordan, and these people have multiple peaks. Maybe
I don't know how we're gauging a lot of buzz or successful here, but I will go with you on this.
Mark, guess what? Everything's cool with Odell Beckham. Ian Rappaport reports that Cleveland has no plans to trade their wide receiver, their temperamental wide receiver. Mm. And guess what? How sure are they of this? When they unveil their new uniforms in a month or so or whatever, he is planning to be part of the fashion show.
I can see that.
I would say that's like with anything, current plans.
That's like the thing he's most excited about this year.
He's never been more excited about something in Cleveland.
Well, the new uniforms, those old ones needed to go, and so that's a nice off-season move. That's how you really win the off-season. Forget last year. That was a fraud. But Odell Beckham, to me, I mean, unless someone came to Cleveland, because they sound very willing to, guys like Olivier Vernon probably won't be back. Joe Schobert, who I would have re-signed at the right price, there's no interest there. So with Odell Beckham, it's hard to believe that if someone had a fascination for him and came with a, you know, a king's ransom, the Browns would certainly listen and could be swayed. I mean, I don't know how much longer you have Beckham on the map there in
Cleveland.
Who
the hell would offer a King's ransom?
I think it's a terrible offseason for a lot of these guys. And it's not, with your same with the draft talent at that position. Why do that?
His stock is pretty low, I think, right now. In fact, I think he's a candidate, if things get back on track there, where he could have a huge bounce back year. But this kind of, if we, this might be a good seg down the road, kind of make or break years or guys, very important years for guys. This is a big year for Beckham.
It is, who played with a torn muscle through the entire year last year.
But that's
year,
part of the Beckham thing, too. He's offense, hurt almost every year, Beckham. That's part of the thing that does not get brought up as much. People get down on him, and I have, and a lot of people have, about some of his behavior and his attitude and his ability to be a teammate. But he's always hurt.
What good's a Lamborghini when it's always in the shop, huh?
Hey!
Oh! Bring on my tools.
But Beckham's pumped about that fashion show.
Yes. I would agree
with
that.
Well, I'm not sure if the pumpness is coming from him.
Yes, he is excited about that fashion show.
Finally, also from Rap Sheet, the Cincinnati Bengals, did I pronounce that correctly?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Are expected to be active in 2020 free agency.
Can I say something real
quick?
Cincinnati has always been a word that whenever I type it, I'm always surprised at how it's spelled.
Tough one.
Would you agree with that?
I've struggled with it for years.
People misspell it. I grew up there, so it's been...
Right, that's why I looked at you when I said it.
It's ingrained in me, so I think it's peculiar when other people... But other people struggle with the extra N versus the extra T.
Absolutely.
For years, put that extra N after the sin.
Oh, see, a lot of people...
No, since sin.
It's C-I-N, C-I-N-N.
Right. Instead of that second N, a lot of people put a second T at the end.
That's exactly. Yeah. That's so wild about it.
Yeah.
I always pat myself on the back, too. I'm like... Yep.
It's not spaghetti.
Right again. You did it right.
It's not spaghetti.
The NFL player version of that is Jimmy Garoppolo. Garoppolo is
one I
struggled
with for
a
while.
Oh, yeah, but I always remember
TD's
advice.
TD.
First it's a Garopp.
And then it's a Polo.
And then it's a Polo.
And then it's a Polo. Exactly right.
Anyway, Bengals expected to be active in free agency, which, no doy. Okay, they got a lot of hosts.
They got no doy on them.
Bringing that back.
No doy. But also... This makes all the sense in the world, Chris Wessling, as a former or Cincinnati native, that if there is any doubt, and there's still percolations, by the way, despite what Mr. Burrow said, and Money, maybe you could back this up about things you might have heard, that he's not totally sold on this, I'm the Ohio boy that's going to stay home and play for the local team. If you go out and drop a ton of money and resources and bring in players, that will send a message, you would think, to the kid that we are serious about building a winner. So not only would it functionally make your team potentially better, it also, in the long run or in the short term, sends a message to this kid that maybe you need to send a message to.
Well, I feel like I do this every year for somebody who usually roots against the Bengals, but if you strain hard enough, you can see this team making some major improvements. You're talking about a team that got nothing out of its first-round draft pick last year, Jonah Williams, who was supposed to be the left tackle, got nothing out of second-round pick, Drew Sample, a tight end. So if those guys come back, they got nothing out of their number one receiver and best player, A.J. Green. They got very little out of John Ross, another first-round pick. If you get all these guys back, and that's a big if, and they play well, and then you throw your free agent money at defense, which they desperately need linebackers and have for a few years, they desperately need help in the secondary. You could strain hard enough, I think, and see a team, especially with all the one-score losses they had last year, that's going to even it. This is not your typical worst team in the NFL, number one pick team. They had a lot of bad luck last year on injuries and close games. I think you could see sort of like a 7-9 team.
Wow.
I don't think that's too much to ask.
But for them to spend money in free agency, you know, no doy, they should, because they have the cash. But that is a sharp left turn for the Bengals, who...
They've allowed free agency
to go year after year without doing a thing.
Their biggest dip into free agency historically has been to bring a guy in on his tour so the agents can use the Bengals to drive up prices on other teams.
I mean, look at it this
way. How helpful.
They have a potentially, like, world-shifting player in Joe Burrow, potentially. If there was ever time to spend some money, do it now and start building around your future.
I think they've seen
it. Did you hear anything in Indy?
I did. Yeah.
Same type of whispers?
I did hear that. I think, you know, if the old truth serum, he doesn't want to play for Cincinnati. But I think he's also, you know, comfortable with the idea that, hey, I'm going to probably be the number one overall pick, and I'm going to make the best of it. It's hard to have, you know, it's not the NBA. It's hard to have leverage. It just is in the NFL. And he's not going to sit out a year. The Bengals know that. So, you know, the way for Joe Burrow to not end up in Cincinnati is to reach out to the team he wants to go to and say, hey, offer them whatever you have to offer them and come get me. And I just don't think there's enough, you know, unless it's the Dolphins that say to the Bengals, hey, we'll give you all three. We'll give you all three of these first rounders and we'll take number one. And I think that's something you'd have to think long and hard about if you were considering, like we talked about, how deep this draft is. If you're the Bengals, that is something I would, you know, really consider. Can we get a free agent quarterback to come here? You know, out of this group, we're talking about musical chairs, right? We're not thinking about the Bengals as one of those chairs.
We're talking about a Brown family that owns this team.
Right.
Where in the past, Mike Brown's comments and his actions, this goes way back 20 years ago, but the Akili Smith draft, when he was offered what the Saints got for Ricky Williams and turned it down. He was offered the Redskins' entire draft plus next year's first rounder and said, no, I've seen my quarterback of the future. It's rare that you get a chance to draft that guy. Right. I'm taking him. And I think with Joe Burrow, he's a guy with perspective. Not every kid coming out of college has great perspective, but he was forced to transfer, was not thought of as a top 10 pick entering the season, and now he's in a enviable position of being the first guy in the draft. So you kind of like just say, hey, I'm in a better position than I thought I was ever going to be in. I'm just going to enjoy the ride.
Well, and if you're Mike Brown, too, you have to recognize, you know, Joe Burrow's, not only is he a talent, but he's got swagger. He's a star.
And that city is going to love
That's
him because
I mean.
Of where like, he's from and what he represents.
Right. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. Let's make Cincinnati fun. Well, money.
Although, real quick, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Did you see Burrow was asked?
I guess, about the chili?
The Skyline or the Gold Star. And he admitted he had never had Gold Star. He had only had Skyline.
La Raville Magnifico?
And then he answered, La Raville neither. Magnifico. He was disgusted by the Skyline,
Wes.
So much so that he would never even try
Wes,
the Gold Star.
Wes, your thoughts?
Well, I used to be a Gold Star man. It's kind of running against the grain because almost everybody in Cincinnati is Skyline. But I used to be a Skyline then too. But now, don't want to tell tales out of school. I make my own Cincinnati chili.
Is that right?
And I smoke all the meat first before I crumble it.
Is that right?
And it gives it that extra zing from the smoke.
So I'm glad I
would eat
this
Wes's
up.
Chili over any like.
But it's not chili.
Made,
it's
anytime.
Like meat sauce.
They
call it chili, but it's not quite
on noodles,
a chili.
Right? It's on spaghetti.
It's not
right?
Texas
noodles.
Style chili. It's Greek Mediterranean immigrant style chili.
So what? Like walk us through the real quick. Just sorry, I've done it again.
The difference between what sets Cincinnati different is you've got. Cinnamon in there.
Okay.
You've got a little bit of chocolate.
Okay.
You've got allspice and cloves.
So it's the allspice. That's what throws it off.
The allspice definitely gives it that Greek sort of.
So no other city is allowed to make the dish this way, or they're just
no other city has chosen to make the dish this way. They're like, you know what, Cincinnati, you go ahead and keep it.
The history of food is it comes from peasants, and these particular peasants landed in Cincinnati,
right?
And they did not land in Texas. Other peasants landed in Texas.
You got peasants with chocolate and cinnamon. They don't sound like the head. Things don't sound too bad for these peasants. It's like you got all sorts
can
of
we
spices.
Do a, can we do a West chili cook-off kind of thing here
Absolutely.
So I can actually try what Cincinnati chili's supposed to taste like?
I will
like.
Bring some. I'm making a fresh batch soon. I will bring
really?
Some in. Yeah.
You smoke it on the egg.
I smoke it on the egg, and then I like to put it in the freezer for a long time.
Is that right?
For like a month, let all those ingredients marry together. Okay. And then because of the smoke infusion,
right.
It's really going to bring it out after a month
and
or so.
And you put it over noodles.
This
and
sounds like a podcast to me. These
guys. How about this?
It's going to be a winner.
I do feel like
I'm
Wes
excited.
Was the first person that I knew really to promote the green egg, and now like every dude has a green egg. Like it's all over the place. It's like we get
they
it.
Are fantastic.
You know, they are fantastic. They are fantastic.
You were on the corner before many. On the green egg.
That's, you know, coming from the South. That
I mean, right. you shipped it across the damn country when you moved here.
The NFL shipped it for me.
Yeah. They're very light, though. They only weigh about 15, 20 pounds. It's a much
depends which
ship.
Egg, though, right?
200 pounds, yeah,
exactly.
And there's no good angle to grab it.
There is not.
Greg's back with us.
You guys are still honking?
We're about to finish.
We haven't even gotten to the segment?
No, we're about to shut
How
it down.
How was the hit,
actually.
Greg?
It was good.
Yeah?
Who was the
Andrew
man?
Siciliano. It was very professional. I got there a little late.
See what he did to me there? A little dig.
No, I'm just saying.
Minor unprofessional.
What am I going to do? Take shots at the host? He's been hosting the show, you know, longer than you have.
Wow.
Ooh,
see what side Greg vicious. Comes down on.
Sometimes there's a quarterback that's delivered six championships, is 42 years old, and you want to trade him out for a guy that threw one of the worst passes in Super Bowl history because he's the shiny new thing.
Speak to that, Greg.
I don't wait. So which one are you in this case? You're the good looking one.
I'm the good looking one that can't play.
Okay,
that's who I am.
Money, you've said it all. So great to have you here.
Said way too much.
And before you go, I will give you the top five live songs updated. For 2020. Number five. God.
You're doing this off the greatest hit, live greatest hits album. Yep. Here.
Number five, Lakini's Juice.
Oh, man.
Number four, Lightning Crashes. Number three, ooh, this one's an upset. White, comma, Discussion. Remember that one.
Sadly, I do.
Number two.
Don't you dare say it. Don't say it. Don't say it.
I Alone?
God, it's the worst song ever. It is in the same category as Incubus's Nice to Know You and Offspring's Keep 'Em Separated, just songs that I played 5,000 times, and I never understood how they were popular. How is 311's All Mixed Up a number one song? It's so god-awful.
And I Alone is one of those. You know, live, these are genuine hits. I'm with Dan on this.
And number one, by Live, their biggest.
That was the Crash Test Dummies. Number one is Selling the Drama.
I don't think that's updated. I think that's the exact same.
Yeah, why is it updated for 2020? There's been no movement with
this
group.
Where are the dolphins
updated in that?
You'll the dolphins don't cry?
I think I told you this story, Money, when we were doing power rankings together last year, but I'll tell it quickly again since you brought up 311. When I was living in Hollywood around 2008, our neighbor was a soap opera star, and he would come over the house and he'd kick my ass in ping pong, and it was really degrading because he was so much better looking than me, and then he was kicking my ass athletically as well. It was rough. But one night we had a party and he was over and we were drinking, and 311 came up, and he's like, I was like, ugh, hate those guys, they suck. And then this soap opera star goes, hey man, take it easy, those guys are my friends.
Me and Nick Hexum, we're like this.
Now, Amber from 311, is that's excusable, right?
I still don't like it. It's
Amber is
it's
the color
palatable.
Of your energy.
Yeah, it's palatable. I like that song. Right. The rest of 311 can take a hike.
If you're curious, 311 was playing the pre-race show at the NASCAR event I went to last year with my
strangely
son.
Strangely not curious, yes, but tell us anyways.
Yeah, they were 10:30 in the morning. They were there.
And then did your son say, wow, Dad, this
we
is
did not, we did not make it.
That's a sweet lick.
We did not make it over to, the Monster Energy drink stage for them.
Terrible.
So it looks like Money when
that would be my throwback pod demeanor. What do you think of this? Terrible. This? Terrible.
We're definitely doing 1997 Secret Samadhi.
Oh, God.
That kicks off with Lakini's Juice.
Yeah, great. I'll be there. Just go ahead and start rolling the tape and just don't wait for me. You get started without me if you need to.
All right, Matt Money Smith, you've done it. Thank you. And you could check out Money, of course, on NFL Network.
You don't need to plug
on
anything.
On NFL Now,
I've
on the radio here in L.A., on the Dave Dameshek football program, and, of course, during football season, he's the voice of the Chargers. And he's our Bob Shepard, the voice of God on the Around the NFL podcast. Mm. And we are very thankful all these years to have you.
I like having
still
a tiny little slice
of
this
show.
Very successful
is the
show.
Money draft.
Exactly. All right. Thank you, boys.
Appreciate out of here. Thanks for listening to the Around the NFL podcast presented by Intuit QuickBooks, official sponsor of the NFL. This is Dan Hansa signing off for The Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Matt Money Smith, and Ricky Holly behind the boards. Don't worry, we'll be back in the studio on Friday with Connie Fox. Till then.